From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Most managers have somewhat stressful jobs, trying to make your department or organization run smoothly, all the while navigating the challenges of directing people toward a common goal. It's tough. Now imagine all of those dynamics at play, but instead, that common goal isn't making widgets, but fighting a massive wildfire that threatens to consume thousands of acres and potentially houses, buildings, and even human beings. That's true stress. In the second part of our series about firefighting in our region, you'll hear from the Northwest Interagency Fire Staff Officer, whose job it is to not only help develop strategies to fight wildfires, but also to protect his people as best he can, all the while knowing that conditions can turn deadly with the simple shift of the wind. It's a job that demands both nerves of steel and an immensely tactical mind. It's interesting that sometimes large wildfires are called a complex. Interesting because fighting such beasts is one of the most complex tasks imaginable. Today on the show, you'll hear from a person whose job it is to build and execute the strategy around fighting our larger and larger wildfires. When you're deploying big teams of people, scores of vehicles, including planes and helicopters, complex seems almost underwhelming as a description. Kevin Reese, from the Northwest Oregon Interagency Fire Management Group. He is a fire staff officer. Really appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Kevin, you know, I'd love for you to perhaps take the audience behind the scenes. For many of us lay people, you know, we think, okay, there's a fire, people are out fighting it, but I'd really love to get from you sort of how you plan for an attack on a fire, how you and your team sort of develop an overall plan to fight a fire.
Well, a lot of our planning takes place or starts almost after the fire is over.
Okay.
So if we get a fire, initial attack or into extended attack, which goes a little bit longer, we get it contained, we get it knocked out, we have an after action review with our folks. We talk about what worked, we talk about what didn't, things that we can do to improve. And we really start to implement that change in real time, if able.
Okay.
We progress. So planning starts for us really as soon as it starts raining, snowing. So November, December, January, where we look at our previous season's fires, we look at our weather, we look at fire indices, which are a combination of weather that are worked through and processed by NOAA, by the National Weather Service, that give us an idea of how much energy a fire may potentially release on a certain day, or how hot and fast it'll burn. And then we look at the resources that we're projecting to need to stop that fire on those conditions, looking at forecasting of weather, and then building that into a plan, calculating weather, our staffing, and our response based on those constantly updating conditions. So every day we get updates from the National Weather Service that give us observed and forecasted weather, and then we base our staffing and our planning off that. So a good classic hot, dry, windy day, we know that we're going to need more resources, so we're going to automatically send or tone out a higher number of resources, maybe 5 engines, 2 crews, ordering aircraft, whatever it may be for the right time in the right place, built in before the fire even starts.
Okay.
And talking with our folks on the ground to know, okay, it's a hot, dry, fiery day. This is what you're expecting. Should we get something? So they can plan for that.
Okay.
Then our folks on the response side work through areas of concern, you know, areas that have high value, either houses or resources, timber, water, infrastructure, whatever it may be. And they might dial up that response. They might dial up the strategies and tactics to stop a fire in that area, or what they really need to do to be successful on any given day. So multiple tiers that start almost continue year round, from January, December-ish, every day, recounting fires, and then our folks on the ground going through it every day to reevaluate You know, were we correct? What could we modify to improve, implement, and then move forward for the next one?
Okay. It's interesting, as I was introducing you, I'm thinking, okay, one of the key words in the organization that you work for, interagency, maybe talk a little bit about that, because I think, again, a lot of people probably assume, oh, it's one particular group of firefighters that is out fighting a particular fire. But obviously, a lot of times, you're going to call on resources from a lot of different organizations. Is that correct?
No, that's correct. So within Northwest Oregon Interagency, we're two national forests, the Willamette National Forest and the Siuslaw National Forest. We have Northwest Oregon BLM District, and we have the Oregon Coastal Complex Fish and Wildlife. So that's just the portion that I manage.
Okay.
But adjacent to that, we've got multiple Oregon Department of Forestry districts. We've got Bureau of Indian Affairs. We've got multiple county and municipal departments. And so all are going to have more than likely a response or the ability to mutual aid assist depending on the need.
Okay.
So if we have a fire, West Eugene wetlands, you know, somewhere close to town, Eugene Springfield's going to go. Oregon Department of Forestry is going to go. Bureau of Land Management is going to go. And more than likely, one or two folks from the Northwest Oregon group are going to go out as well. So it's not always green trucks or white trucks or red trucks. It's the closest available resource, really with the intent of same team. Everyone's out there to stop fires fast. Let's knock them down quick. And everyone working together with that common good mentality in mind to do just that, to put it out as soon as we can and prepare for the next one.
Got it. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Kevin Reese. He is a fire staff officer with the Northwest Oregon Interagency Fire Management. You know, Kevin, I'm wondering too, and I want to get your input into sort of talk about the interdependent strategy of both going out and doing the job, which is to fight and put out a forest fire, but also how do you layer in making sure it's as safe as possible for the men and women that you're sending out there?
That's a good question. And it can be tricky because you have multiple competing objectives. You have usually high value items at risk, whether it's structures and personal property and homes and communities, timber, water, resource, whatever it may be, and humans, our employees and the public and folks around us.
Sure.
And ultimately, trying to apply the balance of, you know, protecting the high value items that we can without incurring an unreasonable amount of risk. And risk is a little vague.
Sure.
But making sure that we're taking risk with purpose, that we, every time we go out to a fire, every time we go out on the line, ultimately, every time you go in the woods, you take on a certain amount of risk, certain amount of exposure. And making sure that we can either reduce that risk, we can mitigate it, or we can minimize it in a way to make that action relevant. So if we've got structures threatened, we're able to get in and put the fire out or prepare a line in advance and backfire to reduce some of the exposure and risk to our folks, but also protect that high value item, we're absolutely going to consider it.
Okay.
Fighting fire is inherently dangerous, and working through the dangers of a fairly high operational tempo environment, fairly high consequences and fairly negative outcomes potentially, it takes a lot of time for folks to prepare for that, to train and to be equipped. So we emphasize and prioritize preparedness so that our folks train repetitively, so that they understand the procedures they need to do an action safely, whether it's spraying water, whether it's driving to a fire, unloading a dozer, whatever it may be, and then equipping them with the best gear that we can, making sure that their gear is functional, making sure that they have protective equipment that dissipates heat or protects them from falling hazards like hard hats or something like that. Fire shelter training, use of emergency vehicles and light bars, all of that plays into the preparedness to hopefully build that efficiency, build that professionalism in that job, that duty, and that process, so that when folks go out there, they're ready, they're prepared, and they're making the best decisions that they can.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, you know, from your perspective, you know, these are folks that are, you know, running towards the danger. So I'd love to hear from you. What makes a really good firefighter?
We look for folks that have a willingness to learn, curiosity, and also a drive to push themselves. This is a very active manual labor job in a lot of ways. And so the history or exposure or experience with sports, with physical activity, with going to the gym, with running, with whatever it may be to stay physically fit, mm-hmm. incredibly important. Also people that are curious, people that are adventurous, and folks that want to go out and serve their community and serve their nation and support those around them.
You know, from someone in your position, what causes you the most stress?
That is a really good question. And I think that shifts depending from fire to fire. One of the common stressors for me is the values at risk and our folks out on the line. And so the responders, whether they're Forest Service, BLM, ODF, responders in general, you know, and I worry about the risk that we take on protecting resources, protecting homes, you know, just as you know, you come up with a plan, you design it, you work through it with your employees, with your managers, with your staff. Everyone comes together to put the plan to work. And then as it's working, you hope that you walk away with a good outcome. Mm-hmm. Also, nobody likes watching houses burn. Nobody likes seeing impact to the private property, to burning watersheds or whatever it may be that has a negative impact. Knowing some areas recover quickly, but a lot of areas, especially in the Western Cascades with heavy timber, do not.
Yeah.
So those potential outcomes, those potential long-term negative impacts can be a stressor. And a lot of it too is the time management of it. You know, once fires are going and we've got an incident management team or we've got an incident commander out on site and we're working our folks through, that we don't operate on banker's hours. It doesn't turn off at you know, 8 o'clock at night and then turn back on at 9:30. It continues on. And so if you have a situation where you have multiple fast moving fires, or if you have multiple fires threatening communities or resource or whatever it may be, that just turns into a grind of checking in with folks, making sure that everyone's got what they need, everyone is doing what they should do, and we're planning and prepared for that next operational shift. And before you know it, 16 hours have gone by, and try to grab a couple hours of sleep and then rinse and repeat. So time management, risk, and exposure are pretty common stressors, I would say.
Sure. Talk about the decision-making process when maybe you're looking at a situation and it could go south and you need to pull your crews back. Maybe take us through if you've had to do that before, even if you could lose structures or lose, you know, kind of those valuable resources. Talk about, you know, when the fire is in certain stages, winning at a certain period of time. Talk about how you make the decision and how you operationally get your folks out of harm's way.
That's a tricky one because it too differs depending on the fire.
Okay.
But very often it's based on the fire activity. So if the fire activity is picking up, meaning we're seeing increased rates of spread, maybe the fire is, you know, flame lengths are picking up, we got some wind or some alignment with wind and slope, so fire is running up a hill, moving faster than our folks will. We try to set those up as predetermined triggers or management action points to get our folks thinking about that prior to that oh no, we got to go stage.
Okay.
And then communicating that with our folks. It doesn't always go as smoothly as that, but reiterating and planning so that our folks that are out on the fire, our folks that are standing on the ridge watching this fire burn, we're just on the side of the road on a roadside initial attack, that they're conscious and aware of what the conditions are. And as the conditions are changing, potentially negatively, that they're aware of that. Now, if we do get a fire that really starts to pick up, so the wind's on it, it's rolling, it's really, really starting to burn hot, making that call with our incident commanders, making that call with our module leaders and our equipment on the fire, checking in, making sure, for one, that they're aware of that increase. Because on a small fire, you can more than likely see the entire thing.
Okay.
On a large fire, that might not be the case. So one, communicating that increase in activity. Two, doing a head count ultimately, making sure that we have accountability for our folks, making sure that we know where they're at. And if we have folks closer to that area where that fire activity is starting to pick up, just having them start moving back towards a safer spot, whether that's a staging area, whether that's a road junction, whether that's completely back down off the fire, and trying to do that in advance. One of the things that we ask our folks to be constantly looking for, but also training in our preparedness, is to evaluate those safety areas or those safety zones constantly as we're working through initial attack, fire, large scale extended attack. And that might be a big gravel pit. That might be an area that's already been burned out and is cool, where folks could step into that burned out area and receive, you know, minimal impact, if none, from the increased fire, just to lessen some of that drive time if they need to get out quickly. And then if we need to, we communicate it, pull our folks off. We immediately do a head count to make sure everyone who was out on the fire is accounted for. We make sure they're in a safe spot. We make sure that they're good for a longer term timeline if they need to. And then we start working through how to re-engage if that's appropriate. So pulling folks off is fairly common on the small scale from a side of a fire or a flank that starts to pick up. It's too active for what we're capable of putting out, so we'll pull our folks back.
Okay.
Large scale, it's less common.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to our audience. We're talking with Kevin Reese. He's a fire staff officer with the Northwest Oregon Interagency Fire Management. Again, for lay people, sometimes there's this, I don't know if tension's the right word, but there's always this kind of this idea of, you know, how best to handle wildland fires, the idea of, if possible, let it burn, because that's important for the environment, but also you have to protect, you know, structures and people and wetlands and timber, like you talked about. I mean, maybe talk a little bit about how that all factors into what you do and what kind of makes for the best, I guess, a plan, if you will.
So each forest, each unit, each district for the BLM has a forest or unit plan that dictates, for one, the ability to manage fire, the use of fire, whether it's prescribed fire, whether it's allowing a natural lightning strike to burn. That's all predetermined. That's okay. Evaluated every couple of years. But a lot of that goes into what are the values that are at risk. And for units that have either checkerboard ownership, where it's 1 mile squares, would be BLM or Forest Service or whatnot, and the adjacent grid or section would be private timber or state, that could have pretty negative consequences if we managed a fire and it went poorly.
Sure.
For units that have large continuous ownership, maybe a lot of eastern forests in the state have this, where besides range and some ecological features, limited infrastructure, limited private ownership, limited negative impact if fire is managed. And that's evaluated in advance. So if we do get a fire, kind of similar to our discussion earlier about preparedness, mm-hmm. and trying to make this a planned event and less reactionary, we already have an idea of where a good spot for a fire would be if we were to manage it. For the Willamette, the Siuslaw, Northwest Oregon, the entirety of Northwest Oregon Interagency, we're full suppression. We don't manage fire.
Okay.
But there are units that can, and there is a lot of value to it. So again, looking at that previously determined policy, ultimately, talking with incident commanders and our fire management officers to see if this is maybe the right fire to do it, and then start coming up with a plan of what we want to do. A managed fire doesn't have to be 20,000 acres. It could be an additional 20 acres to allow it to burn out to a road, or 200, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And balance that, the risk ultimately, with some of the benefits. If it comes out where it benefits to habitat, benefits to hazard fuel reduction adjacent to an area of concern, you know, whatever it may be, outweigh the risks, then we'll talk about it and see if that makes sense. And if the risks don't line up or the values aren't added, then we'll just maintain a full suppression and we'll look to put that out or keep it as small as we possibly can.
Okay. Good enough. Well, Kevin Reese, a fire staff officer with the Northwest Oregon Interagency Fire Management, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us, and thanks so much for doing what you do.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, we'll finish up our series on fighting fires. We've concentrated on wildland fires, but tomorrow, we'll talk with the Eugene Springfield Fire Chief and hear why his team is just as busy as wilderness firefighters during our hot, dry summers. Fires in urban environments present their own unique and dangerous challenges, including putting many more people at risk. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.